In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favorite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the era to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
Search up In the Fale to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Niche and Footy with Sam Wykes and Ginirao Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Kia ora ana, bolavanaka, halo keta, and welcome everyone to Knees and Footy, the best place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Tinirau Aruna, and alongside me each week is my koi, Sammy Wykes. Sammy, big weekend, brother.
Huge weekend. Oh, you can hear my voice already. It's gone.
Sorry about that.
It's been a massive weekend of rugby, just talking, dribbling rugby for like, I reckon, 3 days straight. And sorry about my voice. It's gone.
You're all good. We'll get through the show, but tell us about your weekend. Did I see you commentating?
Yeah, I was commentating the Wallabies. I was on sidelines for the Wallabies and Ireland game. Cracking test match, 41,000 people. It was cold there, but not like no wind, running rugby, and I was just down on sideline with, reporting back up to the comms box. Declan Byrne, our old producer, he was play-by-play caller. And then we had Bernard Foley, former Wallaby, the Iceman. He was the expert, and they were just, we worked well together as a team.
Yeah, nice.
Bit going on. And on that as well, do you know who I saw in the crowd? A couple of league stars.
Yeah, the Roosters boys.
Yeah, Did you see them as well? Sitili Tuponua, former Rooster. But
Siwa Wong.
Yeah, big Siwa Wong. So they were all in there. It was good to see them.
Joey Manu, was he there?
I didn't see Joey, but Will Hopoate messaged me and said that he is in the crowd with his son. So, yeah, everyone was getting around. Apparently Mark Wahlberg was in one of the boxes as well. That's what I'm hearing. Mark.
Jump on my back, mate. We'll try and get through the show.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
Look after that voice of yours.
Yeah.
So today we'll be covering NRL Round 18, but the big news, it is State of Origin week. Game 3, it is 1-1, 1 to New South Wales, 1 to the Maroons.
Confident?
Are we confident as Blues fans?
Yes, definitely not as Maroons fans.
I am excited.
Excited. Okay, well, we'll keep it there. We'll work with that
and
for
then,
sure.
Obviously, in rugby union, the Nations Championships kicked off
over
Nations
the weekend. Nations Championships, Nations Cup. So we'll unpack those games and look forward to what's coming up this weekend. But we've also got our big guest, Ben Volavola, the new signing for the Fijian Drua, age 35. So he's in the prime of his career still plenty of legs left in him. And I know I've known him for a very long time, he looks about 21. Like his skin is beautiful.
Yeah,
does not age. No creases in the lines or anything.
Ben Volavola also represented the Flying Fijians in two World Cups. Hopefully three next year, eh?
I think so. That's what he's hoping for, and I'm hoping for that as well. But
Queensland Reds, he played for.
It just came off the back of the Queensland Reds Super Rugby season. But he's been around too many clubs, so he's got a lot of wisdom around bouncing around, getting into new environments and understanding how to earn respect and trust from his teammates, always being the new guy in a team. So that would be pretty cool to ask him about that.
Just before we go, France, he's played in France, in England,
New Zealand,
Australia.
So yeah, he's been around a lot. So make sure you stay tuned for our chat with Ben Volavola.
Hey guys, it's Dimitri Waimonga here from the One New Zealand Warriors. You're listening to Niche and Footy.
Round 18 NRL, we'll get through the games on the weekend before we get to our briefing of
preview
of State of Origin. But yes, there were only five games played over the weekend in the NRL, and the Panthers get the job done, beating the Rabbitohs 36 points to 14. The Dragons get a win.
How good.
Did you go the Tigers on your tipping last week?
No, I went I went my upset being the Brumbies in the women's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who did you go? Did you go the Tigers?
No.
For your upset?
No, no. I don't know. No, I went the Knights.
Oh, you went the Knights. We'll get to the Knights. We'll get to the Knights. Yeah.
The Dragons, they beat the Tigers 24 points to 10. And soon to be Cook Island international, Valentine Holmes, he scored 2 tries for the Dragons and got them to their victory. The Sharks, they beat the Broncos 28 points to 16. And the Tongan fisherman, Sione Katoa, on that right wing, scoring 3 tries for the Sharkies. This result pushes the Broncos further down the ladder. They are currently...
Are we putting a pin through the Broncos? They're gone?
Well, apparently the coach doesn't think so.
Madge still thinks there's hope, but I just can't. You can't lose that many games within a season and think you're going to sneak into the 8.
They are second last on the ladder.
That is crazy.
Yes, on 4 and against points, they are second last on the ladder. So, I mean, they'll need a miracle to get out of this one. I think so, but great result for the Sharkies. The Eels, they get the win over the Sea Eagles, 23 points to 14. And the final game, the Newcastle Knights beat the Dolphins at home, 13 points to 12. And it was the Samoan Kiwi, Dylan Brown. He was the difference, kicking his first ever field goal in a NRL match to win the game. Let's shift over to game 3, New South Wales versus Queensland. Now, this time it's played in Queensland. The series are tied up 1-1. Look, I think when you look back at the first 2 games, game 1, I thought New South Wales got very lucky with Kalen Ponga getting sent off. They make one of the biggest comebacks in State of Origin history, Blues winning game 1. They head down to Melbourne in game 2. It was a tight first half. Blues had the slight lead, and then Queensland put on an absolute clinic in the second half and demolished the Blues to win game 2. Now we head to Queensland, home of the Maroons in Brisbane, game 3. What are your thoughts leading into this one, Sammy?
Well, the dust has settled now on all the teams. You know, there's a lot of build-up towards, you know, who's going to be selected, who's in and out, and we can all say there was... like from the outside looking in, strange decisions on who was going to be in the Blues team. And now that it's settled, obviously you're just going to back the boys that are going to wear that jersey to try and get the job done in Queensland. So I'm pretty interested to know how, say, like Nathan Cleary goes. Like, you know, if he, how he and Mitch Moses goes, you know, that partnership, because a lot of commentary around that partnership, having 2 dominant halves, doesn't seem to be clicking well.
Yep.
But for yourself, T, you know, preparation-wise, is it important that those 2 guys get together and understand, okay, how do we want to play this game where everyone plays their part? Like, do they have enough of a connection to be able to sort of come up with the game plan to be able to beat Queensland?
I hope so.
Because I do hope so. It feels like if they don't get it right, I don't think nothing's going to go right.
Yeah. Look, I'll start with the Blues. I mean, they've made changes. I think if they went in with the same team or the same mindset even, they probably won't get the result. Given that they've made some big decisions, you know, Jack Bostock going on the wing there for Brian To'o is huge.
Yep.
I thought that he was there to look after Selwyn Cobbo, but then I realised that Mark Nawanganitawase is the right winger. So Jack will have to go onto the left wing, but he's a right side center for the Dolphins. But obviously he's there, he's in form, but also that height difference where he'll be coming up against Jojo Fifita. We've seen in game 2, Jojo Fifita getting up over Bizza for that try. So that's a big change. I love how Liam Martin's come into the squad as well. Just the aggression that Liam and both Hudson Young will add to both sides of the field. And then Hamole Olakau'atu coming on off the bench, most likely for Liam Martin to play down that right side back row. Hopefully that brings a bit of spark and also some points.
When I look at the way Queensland have played both these games, they love to keep the ball alive, really good second man plays and really good offloads happening. Knowing what's coming, like, what do the Blues need to do to be able to stop their expansive style of footy?
Yeah, look, Queensland play such a great brand of footy that you might solve one problem, but there's going to be another problem off the back of solving that one. So I think at first you have to control the ruck speed. You know, controlling the defense in the middle, how fast they get there, then play the balls. It takes away or limits Harry Grant's impact in this game.
And he had a big impact in game two.
Off the back of those fast play the balls he made, he had a huge impact. Now, when you control the ruck speed, you may have to add numbers to the tackles, which means there might be a late third man defender. And we've seen Queensland not afraid to move the ball when they see space, especially down that right to left side, down that left edge. When they are moving that ball, they seem to get some joy with Selwyn Cobbo down that left.
So on that point, like, would they be practicing trying to slow the ball down with just two in the tackle so it keeps an extra man on their feet in the defensive line? Or do you still send that third man in and just try and slow down a fraction more and they've just got to work hard off the ground to get back in the defensive line?
Penrith Panthers do it really well where they invest players in those early tackles, you know, 3-4, but then they do their best to get them back. If they don't get back, they get line speed and try and shut down any movement. Now, at the NRL level, some clubs are afraid to move the ball in yardage. Queensland, they're not afraid to chance their arm. So investing numbers in, I would, but then also being able to, okay, when there is shape, when you see, look up on the edges, you see shape, how are you going to shut down that ball movement? One, line speed, but also you have to work from the inside. Markers have to work, A, B, C defenders have to work. And then if they end up getting around, there has to be, you know, scramble defense or coverage from the inside covering whoever does end up on the outside.
That's a good bit of detail. Like, when you think about your defensive systems and how you want to play, okay, maybe the first two tackles, yeah, we're going to send numbers, try and slow it down. If not, we don't need to send numbers in other ones, different parts of the field. You might be able to change tactics again. So it's a really good insight.
I think it was when Hammer made the break in game two and then Tedesco came and made that tackle. So when the fullback would be the last part of that last line of defense, which means the far winger has to come over and look after that fullback position. Now, Harry Grant was that smart that he knew that the fullback was going to go back, James Tedesco go back to position, so he creeps down the short side. They were all scrambling, and then they scored that try in the first half, the Maroons. So a bit of defensive work for the Blues to try and do, but Queensland, they're just relentless. They are relentless in the way that they play the game. The other thing I'd love for the Blues to do, take their chances. You know, when they get quick play the balls, when they get offloads, when you asked about Nathan Cleary and Mitch Moses, yes, there should be chemistry, but also how do we play when we have a man down or we're on the front foot?
Front football, when we see swing space, the club, yep.
So getting everyone around them to push, hit holes and create opportunities. Let's try and, you know, move the ball, find ways to score points, because some of those opportunities don't always come up.
Yeah, and Queensland, man, I know that we speak about New South Wales a lot, but they are a very classy side, Queensland. Very tough to beat, like, anywhere, but let alone on their home turf in a decider. So it's going to be a big clash. Can you give me a score prediction?
Oh, score prediction. I reckon I'm going to give you two.
Okay.
It's either going to be Queensland win by heaps, or Blues win by
a small margin.
A small margin.
Ooh, I like that. Okay. Either way, we're safe there.
That's my prediction.
Okay, awesome, awesome.
And all the best to the New South Wales Blues, to all our Queenslanders who say that we are very biased. Yes, we are, because we're New South Wales fans. So, but I do think that Queensland do play a very, very good brand of rugby league. And in other news, the Francis brothers, Tupou and Tony, do you know them?
I actually do. That's actually Will Hopoate's first cousin. So John Hopoate, his sister, that's her boys.
Really?
Yeah.
They're another Hopoate's. Yeah. Oh, my days. How much bigger can this family get? But Tony playing for
the Titans yeah.
And Tupou currently at the Broncos.
Yeah, so he just played in that Queensland Origin 19s team last week or the week before.
And smashed today.
And he's only 18.
Yeah.
So he's a good footballer.
Well, these two boys, they are eligible to play for Australia, New Zealand, Tonga, Lebanon, Fiji, and France this World Cup.
How does that?
It's been reported that both brothers intend to represent Lebanon.
Yeah, their dad's Lebanese, but I was like, I'm trying to get the Fijian part of it because
We need to get one of these boys on the show.
I'll confirm with their cousin Will and just think, hey, are you Fijian as well, brother? You left that bit out. You only told me you're Tongan.
It's funny when I watched Tupou Francis because they were like, if you have followed him when he was
we're going back 5 years ago.
5 years ago when I was in the UK, I used to watch this little kid on social media and he was a character. He used to make me laugh. And it was Tupou Francis.
It was him. And his body shape has changed a lot since then. And now he's fit. And he is ready to go. He'll be in the NRL before you know it. But that's pretty cool news that they'll be representing Lebanon at the Rugby League World Cup. T, outstanding work on your Rugby League detail.
Hello, guys. This is Isol Nasilasila from the Fijian Drua, and you're listening to Legion 40.
Well, Sammy, big weekend of International Rugby Union. Talk to me.
Yeah, Nations Championships and the Nations Cup kicked off over the weekend, and honestly, it was an incredible start for the international window. Every test match that was played delivered everything you wanted to see. You know, tries, close games, couple of blowouts, big hits, huckers, free-flowing footy and big crowds everywhere. So I used that weekend to tell my wife that I've got a lot of work on. So I got out of a lot of chores. So I was sweet as. And she tried to question me, but when I say it's work, oi. It's work.
Oh, well, now you're coming. This is the working part.
So I need that information to feed Indonesian footy. And I'll start with Fiji versus Wales. Wales won this one 39 points to 24. But Fiji was superior when it came down to that running rugby. You know, their Fijian flair, like entertaining, like using the ball, pops, flick passes, ball through the legs. Like they were sensational in that part of the field. And I know people have been saying that they need to get the balance right. Like that style of footy can work, but at test footy, like you need to be able to kick, you need to be able to play the territory game and play a bit conservative. But to be honest, man, I disagree with all those comments. I just think they need to double down on their style of footy.
Playing their style, yeah.
Yeah, I like you could tell straight away what their identity was from the kickoff. So usually if you kick the ball deep, you know, you'd catch the ball, set up a phase, maybe play one more, get both sides of the ruck with a kick chase, either put up a contestable or kick it out and you exit cleanly. So the Fijians, though, Sammy Radradra catches it deep, looks left, like not much of the blind side, boom, right foot, puts Wayne Nicolo down the edge and he goes steaming down the left-hand touchline, ball over the head, back on the inside, flick. They eventually get tackled out, but I was like, oh, we're off to a fly. How good is this?
You got to think too, if you're the other team, if you're Wales, how do you prepare to play these teams?
Exactly.
Right? Going into these games and it could be like, yep, stick strong and just, you know, defend well and they'll make the errors. But if Fiji execute and they've been given the license to play their brand of footy, you know, they're only going to get better. And then it's more about the other teams having to worry about Fiji.
Yeah, if Fiji doesn't play that style, they're not scoring points. And the biggest one, what you just touched on, you don't strike fear in the opposition. Because if they're going to play that conservative style, like the other team's going, sweet as, I don't have to worry about being stuck on an edge one-on-one with someone like a Tuisova or Celestino Ravutamando who's got great footwork. So they need to continue to put the pressure on and play their style so they can continue to get their points. Where they do need to be better, though, is some penalties, like careless penalties, you know, taking someone out in the air at line-out time, you know, at scrum time, making sure that you don't get giveaways, penalties from a pushover, because that's what allowed Wales to play their style, get the penalty, kick to the corner, more try.
So that's more of a discipline and smarts thing, yep. Like the awareness thing.
Individually, they just need to stay, you know, like mentally strong and stay disciplined within their parts of the field, you know, so like they don't switch off. They don't give easy outs so the opposition can find a way back in, because when you look at, again, I look at the try of, or the disallowed try from Celestino Ravutamanda, on the right side, it went tip pass to Rayasi. Rayasi threw the legs, like passes it through his legs to Tuisova. Tuisova catches above his shoulder. Basketball pass over the top of a defender. Celestino, massive dive in the corner, but he just doesn't get the downward pressure to put the ball down. It ends up being a knock on, but you're just like going, this is the best running rugby I've ever seen. Like, they are really chancing their arms. So double down on your game, Fiji. Keep going. Just stay disciplined and just finish and execute. So they will play England this week, which will be a tough game for them. But we'll move over to Samoa versus Hong Kong, China. Samoa put on a clinic, 66 points to 19. Tuna Tuitama, he scored in the first minute. Their number eight, Jokopo Mapu, was running amok on Hong Kong's defense. It was like playing the under eights again. And a double on debut for winger Solomona. So they are playing with a lot of confidence. That's two wins in a row for Manu Samoa. And if you compare that to last year, it's like you could just see it within the group. They're more connected and they're probably going to need that confidence going into their next game against Georgia. Tonga versus Zimbabwe. They won this one in a tight one, 36 points to 26. Zimbabwe were actually in front, 26-19, with about 13 minutes to go. Patrick Pellegrini, yellow card for back chat to the ref. He wasn't happy with whatever happened after one of their tries. And I just see the ref get his yellow card out, send your marching orders, and he's still chirping away as he's really getting yellow carded.
He didn't come across like that when he was here on Nijin Footy where we got to interview him. So.
That's the competitive side that coming out of him. Yeah. So, but
was he like that when you'd play cards when you were little? Or like sports games?
No, he didn't say anything to me. He did not dare to say anything. But when he came back on, they scored two tries and he kicked the penalty goal to seal the game. So I guess the good signs for Tonga is that they found a way to come back and get the job done. And then we mentioned the Wallabies, nail biter. Ireland won 33 points to 31. Could have had Ben Donaldson had a chance to kick a penalty after the bell to win the game. Didn't quite land it. So
where was the kick from?
40 out sideline. Kickable, got the distance, just didn't get the direction. So unfortunate for the Wallabies, but they played a really good game. So unlucky not to get that win. And for the All Blacks, Dave Rennie, Adi Savea, 34 points to 32 over France. So that was a cracking game. Seesaw style of scoreline.
How much of a difference does Adi make? Eh?
Oh, huge.
I've seen that turnover. He gets the ball, gets the penalty, quick tap.
Mate, they're on.
It goes in and then they score on the next place.
So. I don't think the All Blacks have never not had effort on effort on effort, but it just seems under Dave Rennie and with Artie, they live and breathe effort on effort and they're only going to get better and better.
France is a hard team to beat as well.
Absolutely. Eh? They've been very dominant and sort of been the All Blacks bogey team for a very long time, but they get the job done on that. And then we'll cover on Friday and preview a few of the other test matches for round two of the Nations Championships and Nations Cup. But that's it for Rugby Union.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Yes, joining us here on Nijin Footy is Shelley Long. Every Monday, our PNG Orchid star. And we have just kicked off with the NRLW season last weekend. Shelley, your former club, the Cowboys, I'm going straight there. Talk to me. What's happened? Cowboys v. Brisbane in Brisbane.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. I don't know why I'm laughing. I just... It's just the confidence that you gave us last week.
I should have said, how are you, Shelley?
Yeah. But no, go straight there.
Straight in the deep end. Talk to us, Shel.
I think it was a very tough game to watch, unfortunately. And like you said, T, the Broncos did come away with the win, 50 points to 4 in that game, the same score that they were held to last year as well. The Brisbane Broncos, in terms of their recruitment, I think they've done really well. The likes of Jesse Southwell, they've kept Ali Brigginshaw and Tamika Upton in that side. They're dangerous. And even more so when you add Jesse Southwell to the mix. I think in terms of that game, the Broncos dominated in the majority of the overall game, and they looked extremely polished as well. I think for the Cowboys, they have a lot to take away from that game. I think running one out was definitely an area that they'll look to fix moving forward, and defensively as well. Just tightening up around the ruck area and also making sure that they're not kind of falling for any single one outs as well.
Yep. I mean, the defending premiers got off to a great start, and everyone keeps talking about this two-horse race with the Brisbane Broncos and the Sydney Roosters, but what other teams caught your eye over the weekend?
For me, it was definitely the New Zealand Warriors. I think they had an outstanding performance over the weekend against the Bulldogs. They looked dangerous. For me, it was Aminita Pucky. She scored two tries in that game. She's been doing extremely well for them. I think she's had a great preseason behind her. And Patricia Malieppo, she has also been outstanding for them. They're her second year in the NRLW competition, but she's given us a lot to look at. And I think moving forward, they'll be another challenger for the final series.
Yeah, I'm keen to see the Warriors play a team like Brisbane Broncos or the Sydney Roosters. Get a measure on, you know, where they're at, and you know they've recruited really well with Aneta Claudia Nuosala and
Mele
Hufanga and Gail as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. But any other games that you were that you end up catching over the weekend?
Yeah, look, I love the footy. I thought just to kick us off at the beginning of the NRLW competition was the Sharks versus the Knights. The Knights ended up winning 18-4 in that game, and I thought it was a great way to enter us into the 2026 campaign of NRLW. It was a tight game. Cronulla Sharks, unfortunately, did lose a player to the sin bin. So for the scoreline to be 18-4, I think they've got a lot going for them in terms of the season. And the Newcastle Knights, 18 points is not a lot for them. They're an attacking team. They do generally well. So I think they've got a lot to continue to build on as well.
Yeah, we spoke to Sala Tongatuki on Friday on Nijan Footy and covered that game, and just the way that the Knights carried the ball, got quick play the balls, and then just caused a bit of dramas with the ball in hand against the Sharks defensive team. But looking at all the games, which player would you say really stood out to you after watching the first round of NRLW?
For me, the player that stood out the most was definitely Aminita Pucky. I absolutely love watching her on the weekend, and I think she's one of those young players that has a lot to still continue to give to the game. She's been in the system for quite some time now, but she ended up scoring herself two tries, and I think she's worked really hard in the off-season to get herself back into that starting team. And she is an adaptive player as well, so really excited to see how she goes throughout the remainder.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she played in the halves for Tonga as well. So, yeah, good start to her season. And it's also good to see our good friend Sala Tongatuki, the West Tigers, beating the Parramatta Eels 28-16. It's been 3 years now where we had Sala on Nijan Footy, and the last 2 years they've lost the first couple rounds.
Do you remember in the first year where she came in full of confidence, yep, and then they lost one, lost two, lost
three.
And
then
and then we were like, hey, Sala, are you going to come on Friday? We got no reply back. We got crickets. Like, yep, she did not want to talk to us, and she would come on like after eight episodes. Sorry, I just didn't want to talk to anyone.
Yep, so join us on Nijan Footy Fridays to catch up with Sala, and I'm sure we'll see a very positive Sala on Friday. But that's it for rugby league. Let's shift over to rugby union. Super Rugby Women's, what do you got for us?
Yeah, so the final rounds of Super W has officially ended. It was a great season this year, and I think there was a lot of wins that happened that weren't expected either throughout that campaign. So it was really down to the final whistle. The Fijian Drua, they finished their regular season as minor premiership winners, and the Western Force, they ended up coming second just based on point differentiations there. So that's really exciting for those two teams. I think when you look at the competition and what it's been previously, the Waratahs and the Reds have always been top contenders. But this year, when you look at that with the Fijian Drua and the Western Force being on the top of the table, I think that's a great, there's been just a great competition overall. And I think that that's really well deserved as well.
Did the Tars and Reds players all jump over to NRLW?
There's a fair few. We highlighted that last week. There's about 16 in total. It's very good news for the Fijian Drua finishing on top. They were outstanding when they put a clinic on the Reds. And then for the Waratahs, as Shelley mentioned, they've been the form team for so long. They've never even lost to an Australian side before, and they lost their first time against the Force last week. And now it's back-to-back losses against the Reds, so that pushed them down. So they'll be pretty disappointed with the fact that you know, they won the comp last year. But
now I think they go back and play Force in the semis.
What's that? Sorry.
Now they'll go back.
Yeah,
and
back play the Force in the semis. But the one for the draw, home ground advantage. They'll be playing the Reds in their semi final in La Tocca. So this could be an unbelievable crowd at La Tocca, because if they win this, I'm pretty sure, and I'm hoping that the draw get a home grand final. I'm hoping that's the case. I've got to fact check that, but Shell, that will be unbelievable if there can be a semi-final and a grand final in the Sugar City in Fiji.
Oh, 100%. And you look at kind of the last couple of weeks, the draw has had a bye this week. The Reds played Waratahs in that game, just gone. So they're going to be battered. And then you're versing the draw at a home game. So, you know, the crowds are insane. I've seen the videos. I've never been there personally, but I'd love to go one day. But the crowds look insane. And I think when you've got that driving behind you, you know, you've got every chance of winning. And I think for the Reds, they're going to be battered and bruised after taking that win against the Waratahs.
Great work, Shelley. We'll have you back on next Monday, Nijin Footy. And have a great week, Shel. It's, always a blessing having you here on the show.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a wonderful week.
Talofalava, kia orana. I'm Lima Sopoanga, and you guys are listening to Nijin Footy.
Here we go, T. Our guest on today's show is arguably one of the biggest sign in the Fijian draw I've made since probably Nemanja Nondolo Kurundrani. But unlike Nems, this bloke is still fit, fine, ready to go with more than 200 professional games under his belt. He's played Super Rugby. He's played in the top 14 in France. He's played in the Premiership in England. He's also represented the Flying Fijians at two Rugby World Cups, chasing a third one, we hope. And he's joining us today on Nijin Footy. Please welcome Ben Vola Vola Bulavinaka Volivinabras. Thanks for joining us.
Vola Bulavinaka, thanks for having me.
Now, it is great to have you on, my friend. Before we get into, I guess, you know, a bit of culture, a bit of footy chat, obviously the ripe age of 35, is it?
35, yeah.
35,
yeah.
You've just come
not
off.
35.
Man, he looks good, doesn't he?
He is looking good.
Oh, man,
35.
It's that Fijian oil, bro. It's that coconut oil, man.
What's the secret, bro?
Yeah, a bit of coconut oil, a bit of kava.
Yeah. Man, that kava ages the boys. I don't know what you're drinking, but look, you've just come off a season with the Reds. I thought you were outstanding every time you came off the bench there, but I just want to do a quick check-in with the body. How is it?
It's good. It's traveling well. When you look after it, it pays you back, so thankfully, it's feeling good.
Fijian background, whereabouts in Fiji are you from?
So I grew up in Suva. My family is from high level over in Suva, right next to the airport there in Nasori.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, family's from over there.
And how big is your Fijian family?
Like any other island family, we're quite big, scattered across Oz, Fiji, and around the world as well. We've got a good share of our family now based in Sydney, some here in Brisbane. Some still left over in Fiji. I've got one sibling, so pretty small compared to other island families, but a lot of cousins, aunts and uncles, yeah, grandparents, they just keep going.
You just mentioned that you grew up in Suva. What was your upbringing like?
It was awesome, man. I think it really laid the foundations for the rest of my life. I was born in Sydney, and then mum and I moved to Suva probably before I even turned one. And then lived there for the first 9 years of my life, went to school there, played the first organized game of rugby there while at school. So it was awesome. I had fond memories of living in Fiji.
Oh, good.
Yeah, when you think about living in Fiji as a kid, like it's, you just think so relaxed, laid back, and, you know, kids just roaming free. You know, what were your fondest memories about living and growing up in Fiji and just being a kid there?
Just like you said, relaxed. You're so naive to the struggles of life because you're so young. Everything was based around the game at the time. Like if you grew up in Fiji, rugby was it. You wanted to try play sevens or wear the white jersey for the 15s format. Everyone's playing rugby there. It's like embedded within our culture. So if you could find like an empty bottle, coconut shell, if you were walking around with an actual rugby ball, you were like, you were a high flyer. I remember school games at lunchtimes was just like an empty soft drink bottle filled with sand or dirt. And then you just make be with what you had. Simple life, but so fulfilling.
Then moving over to Australia when you were 9 years old, what was that transition like as a young kid growing up in Fiji, then coming over to the big city of Australia?
I think my mum was the only one that sort of understood how intimidating it was for myself. I had friends at a school that I thought was big, and then I go to a Aussie primary school that was twice as big as the primary school I was going to in Fiji, you know? So culturally, it was different. You speak differently. The way you connect with people is different because cultures is different. Mm. So it was quite intimidating for myself. And even like organized rugby. So I didn't play club rugby until mum sort of found a club through a random relationship that she had at work. But whilst playing organized rugby in Fiji at school, we were playing bare feet. Balls were found. Any ball that could be found was used during those games. Whereas then fast forward playing childhood grassroots rugby in Sydney, and like mum has to find boots for the first time on like wearing a mouth guard because you were supposed to wear a mouth guard. So it was different. It was different. It took some time to adapt to. I think for my brother, it was a bit of adapting as well. He was 5 at the time. So I guess once the first few years went by, then we actually started to see how blessed we were to be in Sydney.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny you bring up some of those scenarios that you face, those adjustments, because when my younger cousins who grew up in Fiji, probably the same time they came back, you know, at the age of 10 or 11, the one thing they hated about going to school in Australia was wearing shoes. They just couldn't, you know, stand wearing those leather school shoes because wear no shoes and just be free and you know, sing a lot of hymns and songs and just be free the whole time. So for yourself, you know, what was probably the hardest adjustment, you know, out of all those things that you've just mentioned?
Probably building a community that I was comfortable in, you know, like just finding friends that could understand me and I could understand them. And I think it was just the start of what was to come, because I've lived in so many places now, and you just have to throw yourself into cultures if you want to fit in and find a sense of belonging. So I think that was the biggest challenge, was like just because you're so young, all you want is just a group of friends and just to feel comfortable and a sense of belonging.
A good place where you find a sense of belonging is playing rugby. Like that's, everyone speaks that language, so that always helps a kid. You know, you mentioned playing, you know, loosely in Fiji, then organised when you moved to Brisbane. But who really planted the seed for you that you admired, where you go, man, I want to play like that player?
Professionally? I mean, while I was in Fiji, it was always Sarivi.
Yes.
And Nicky Little.
Oh, Nicky Little as well,
And Nicky Little, playing the 15s format, it was always Nicky Little. Always wanted to kick like him. And then just growing up, like he was different because he was a 10 that was physical too, you know? He wasn't just a guy that could attack with the ball. He didn't shy away from the defensive, physical battles as well. So those two guys growing up in Fiji were two guys I loved watching. Obviously, Sarivi was the king back then. And then moving to Sydney and watching like the Wallabies and the All Blacks and stuff was guys like Larkham and Carter. These guys that I really looked up to just because of how successful they were and the way that they played. But also, I grew up as a skinny, tall, lanky kid. And at the time, tens were like stocky, shorter guys that could use their feet and stuff. And I could relate with Larkin because he was tall, he was lanky, and he knew how to play really well and be effective in that way. So he was someone I looked up to.
Before we get to your rugby union journey and more into it, was there any thoughts of ever playing rugby league?
I grew up sort of dipping my feet into rugby league, but mum hated. she hated the idea of me playing rugby league. She was like, it's too rough. And I'm like, have you seen the rucks in union? It's brutal, man.
Yeah.
Even though I don't go near them.
I was going to say, bro, have you ever stuck your head in a ruck yet? But
still, 13 years, I've still yet to put my head in a ruck, eh? But then all my cousins and close friends that I went to high school with, they were all like rugby league players, first rugby league players, and then they would jump over to rugby union and play and kill rugby union. So obviously you're surrounded by the NRL when you're growing up in Australia, so you always wanted to try it. And I would sometimes train with some of the rugby league guys at my high school. So I went to Endeavour Sports High, and they have quite a successful rugby league program over there.
Yep.
Even though I was predominantly in the union program, which is a lot smaller than the league one, I was constantly rubbing shoulders and befriended guys who were playing rugby league, and obviously, and then went through and created and built a rugby league career for themselves. So I would try it here and there, but never like never played organized rugby league games. Wished I could.
I was just trying to think of all the leagues at Endeavour then, like Cole Stanley or Pinani around your age.
The Stanley brothers were there. Joey Lealua was in my year.
Yeah, that's right, yep.
Cameron King was in my year. So there's a few of them, man. They were stacked, that team.
Well, man, I'm glad you stayed with Rugby Union because you've been outstanding. You've had a long career so far. And if you've just joined us, we are chatting with Ben Volavola, new signing for the Fijian Drua. But, Benny, let's talk about your career. Like, you've bounced around to a lot of different places. You've got a lot of experience globally, in the top 14, in the Premiership, in England with Leicester, Super Rugby. We've had some players, myself and Tebow, we bounced around to a couple of teams as well. You know, for yourself, what was it like, just always bouncing around to different teams and not really sort of being able to be a one-club man or a two-club man in your career?
Before the whole professional rugby thing started, I always wanted to travel and try to travel the world. And I've been blessed that rugby gave me that. So that was a dream that rugby was enabled to bring and make it a reality for myself. And I think early in my career, at the start, clubs build this perception where loyalty is awesome and if you're a one club man, it's an unreal achievement. But for myself, to be able to travel around and be a part of different cultures and different teams, for myself, it continued to drive the competitive juices because you don't build this sense of being naive and staying comfortable. Every time you go to a different team, a different club, place your feet into a different culture, you're forced to prove yourself again because they're different teammates. They don't really know what you bring to the table. So then those competitive juices are continuously being forced and driven. And I think that's one thing that I loved about my career in bouncing around different teams and cultures and stuff was I had to be on my toes the entire time because every team I went to, I had to prove myself again. Mm. Whereas I feel like if I stayed in a place for too long, I got this sense of, okay, I'm comfortable now. This feeling of being naive and like I've shown the club what I can do. So therefore they like this sort of, this self-arrogance in a way.
Yep.
So it challenged me every time that I changed teams. I knew I got to prove myself again. I got to get the respect of these of the group and enable myself to grow in that way.
And how would you prove that going into a new club? Like what does that look like? Proving to your teammates or earning respect? What does that look like throughout your actions?
Yeah, you touched on it just then. I think it was through my actions and through my experience. I think if a group gravitates to you when you speak through your actions before you speak verbally. It sort of shows a sense of humility as well. You're here to work for them and you're not here to bark at them. So when a group of guys and a group of people see you're in pain and you're working hard for the group before you even say a word, I just find through my experience, guys start to gravitate to you. And then the chat starts happening after that because you start feeling like you're earning their respect and therefore they want to pick your brains and how can we do this better? And the conversations begin after that.
Cool. Man, I love that advice, bro. And obviously your actions led you to playing for the Flying Fijians. Man, you've played in two World Cups now, but that first feeling of being called into the Flying Fijians and then playing a game for them, what was that moment like for you?
It was unreal, surreal. It was such a proud moment for myself and my family. Growing up in Australia, I never thought I would be playing for the Flying Fijians. I think as a kid growing up in Australia, if you're playing rugby union, the Wallabies is like the ultimate goal. And then I didn't realize the feeling that I felt after playing for Fiji and that game being in front of our people. Although it wasn't an official test, we played against the New Zealand Maoris in Suva. But to sing the national anthem before it, to do the Vimbi before the game, you're just never prepared for the emotions that run through you. Mm-hmm. And then for the game to be over and to realize that you wore the white jersey and play, and for the family to be there in Fiji as well. A lot of them throughout my Super Rugby career weren't able to watch me play live, because at that time, obviously, the draw didn't exist. So to be able to play my first official rugby game for the Flying Fijians at home in Suva in front of family and friends that weren't usually there live was something really special.
Being on the road, playing for different clubs, also, you know, moving to Australia, but also having the opportunity to grow up in Fiji, when you do represent the Flying Fijians and going into camp, does that give you that bit of opportunity to connect closer and reconnect to your Fijian culture?
Big time. Big time. I'm so grateful for the guys who have the guys in the past who were part of the Flying Fijians when I first walked into camp, and even the current guys, younger guys that started when I was there and now coming through the ranks. It was really the group of people that I played with that enabled me to delve into my culture. Like, even like, I don't speak fluent Fijian, but ironically, I started speaking better Fijian because of these guys and being in that culture and rubbing shoulders with these guys. So it doesn't just bring me external exposure by playing these many tests for the Flying Fijians, but it allowed me to connect with the boys that were around me and also the people over in Fiji as well.
When I think about some of the players that you've played with in that white jersey, you know, Kempisi Maafu, you know, who we're close with, you know, and Nemani Nondolo Kurundrani, again, someone that we speak to often on our Friday shows. You know, when you see where you've come from, like, how does it make you feel knowing that you've played with some unbelievable players?
Yeah, so blessed, man. So blessed. Couldn't have written this myself. You mentioned Kempisi Maafu. People ask me the reason how I got into the Flying Fijians, or where the fire was lit to playing for the Flying Fijians, and it was Kempisi Maafu. He was constantly in my ear telling me how much it meant to him. Played for the Flying Fijians, my first game, and the entire week just being there with him and Nems, it's just a feeling that it's hard to explain, but it's just felt so fulfilling and content. Man, he's a big reason to why I wore that jersey.
At the ripe age, or the young age of 35 years old, in the career that you've had so far, when you reflect on, you know, the journey you've had, what are you most proud about?
I think I'm more proud with the last few years of my career than the early parts. Like, the reason why I say that is because I think my mentality is different now, and I've become a better rugby player because of my mentality now, and that's to serve first. Mm. When I go into a different culture and my mindset is to serve first, sooner or later, guys want to serve you because of how you're serving. You become richer for that, and you're enriching other guys for it as well. If you have that mindset, whenever I have that mindset, I have to be at the top of my game. I've got to be physically ready if I want to serve these guys the best that I can. I just wish I had that mindset my entire career.
Man, the way you were running around during Super this year, I did say, thought you were 25 again. Like, you just moved freely. So you have been looking after yourself. And then we now move into the Fijian Drua, the signing to be able to play Super Rugby for the Drua. How long were you thinking about playing for the Drua? Even when they came into the competition, like, how long has that been sitting with you to potentially, you know, I want to represent the Drua one day as well?
I always thought it would be a cool idea. I never thought the opportunity would come. Because there's so much talent coming through the system in the country, I always thought it would be cool to play for a club that we've been wishing for God knows how long. Like, there'll be generations before us, older people living in Fiji now who've always wanted to have a Super Rugby team based in Fiji, and now they have it. I think it was just always sort of like a wish and a hope. And now that it's reality and we'll be joining them, it's pretty surreal.
You did say a big part of signing for the Drua was because you wanted to represent the Flying Fijians again at World Cup next year. You know, how much is that burning inside you to be able to get there in good shape for the Drua, play World Super, to then hopefully get that call up?
It's a massive reason to why we're going. And I think the fire's been burning since 4 years ago when I missed out on the 23 World Cup. So that fire's been burning ever since. But the fact that I'm able to sort of do both, or potentially do both, and play for the Drua and also potentially make the Flying Fijians is something so special to me, you know, because to be able to serve the boys that are coming through, like my own people, something I'm really looking forward to, and helping the club get to places that they're wanting to get to.
Man, absolutely love that, bro. Look, you're going to go on to do amazing things. We wish you all the best. Thank you so much for your time being on here on Nijan Footy with us, sharing your story. And if I took something from that, is being of service. Make sure serve first.
I've already got it noted.
You got it noted down? Yeah. So is that your coaching speech for this weekend?
That's it.
Serve first. But all the best with the journey, bro. Hopefully we catch up soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, guys. Really appreciate you guys.
Give me three answers for this one.
Yes, if you are just joining us here on Nijin Footy with Tinido Aruna and Sam Wykes, this is where we like to finish our show with our competition of Give Me Three. It is our version of categories where one of us will ask the other a Give Me Three question. Well, now I've got Sam changed the rules last week. So Sam changed the rules. So I thought I'd just follow his rules. And then we keep a score throughout the year, and at the end of the year, the winner receives a jersey of their choice. From the loser.
You can wear your jersey when you get the feed, so just wear that at the same time. I need a big feed. But anyway, let's go.
So you spoke last week about the milestone man, Jason Taumalolo. And it's 300 games. Well, there's also another Tongan that is about to play 300 games in his next NRL game. Do you know who that is?
I believe it has to be a man from the Roosters.
Yes.
Big Nella Tupo.
So we're going to keep the same trend that you done last week. Ooh. And we've got three questions.
Oh, here we go.
Surrounding the great man, Daniel Tupo, and like celebrating his milestones.
I'm glad I changed the rules a fraction because these are great.
Yep. So how old was Daniel Tupo when he made his NRL debut? That was one of your questions for Jason Taumalolo.
Yeah, it was. I know. It's good. I know he's a para junior.
Yeah.
They didn't want him there.
Yeah.
Crossed over to the Roosters. I'm going to say the ripe age of... I want to say 20.
Ooh. 21.
Ah.
I think he just turned 21 like a few weeks before.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
All right. That's all good. I'm going to help you out of here. He made his debut.
Against which team?
What out of Sydney team did he play in his debut?
Repeat that question.
Which out of Sydney team?
Out of Sydney team. So that narrows it down.
It down a lot.
Warriors, you got the Queensland teams. Obviously the Dolphins weren't in there. So I am going to say it was... I'll say I'm going to go the Warriors.
It was the Canberra Raiders.
Damn it.
They lost 24-20 and he made his NRL debut.
That should have been multiple choice.
In 2012.
on fire here.
Now with the big game.
Where's the one that where I can at least get 1 point? Because I knew there was one.
It's coming now.
It's coming now, you reckon?
It's coming now. It's coming
Don't
now.
Don't ask me who they're playing against. I've got no idea.
No, I think everyone forgets how successful Daniel Tupo has been. He's won 3 premierships.
Okay, yes, he has.
13, and I believe it might have been 17, 18, or 18, 19. He's also represented Tonga. He's also played for the Blues. Now, with State of Origin coming up this weekend,
okay,
how many games for the Blues has he played? Is it A?
Multiple choice, okay.
A, 6 to 8 points. 6 to 8 points. 6 to 8 games.
Yep.
B, 9 to 11 games. And C, 12 to 14 games.
That's a good question. He was there for a little bit. 3, 6. I'm going to go, what was B?
9 to 11.
I'm going to say 9 to 11, B.
Great work.
Yes.
10 games.
There we go.
Has played for the Blues. And
I like those questions. I get to know a little bit about the stars playing the game, bit of their journey. So I'll take 1 point. I'm happy with that. So are we happy with the tinkering of the rules?
I don't know. Did I get one last week?
Yeah, you got one.
Oh, okay, yes.
I gave it to you.
If you need to go down that road.
All good. Wrap me up. Yes, wrap me up. But that's it for Nijin Footy. Hey, big thank you to Ben Volovolo, who was our guest today. And make sure you tell your footy-loving friends about Nijin Footy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website.
Up the Blues! This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.